Come along, Jennifer. You've been in your new home long enough. Time to move the curtains. Just a fraction. Peep through the gap. Check whether I've found you yet. Do it now. It's been such a long time since I've seen your pretty, angry little face. A surprise for you, I'm sure. You'll know who it is. You always know who it is, don't you? But do the police believe you anymore, Jennifer? Probably not. And if they do, so what? I'm the local hero. And what have I ever done but love you? What have I ever done but love you?
Love to Hate by Wally K. Daly, starring Andrew Sachs and Kathy Tyson.
You are James Stuart Pringle.
I am.
You are accused that you pursued a course of action against a Miss Jennifer Georgeson, which you knew or ought to have known amounted to harassment under the 1997 Protection from Harassment Act. How do you plead? Guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty. Sorry. Not guilty. In Scarlet Town, where I was born, there was a fair maid dwelling. I like your new home, Jennifer. Ground floor. Very convenient. You're always so careless with the curtains. Do you know that, Jennifer? It's always the teeniest of gaps. And that's all it takes. Have I ever told you what a beautiful body you have, Jennifer? It's perfect. When Jimmy Grove on his deathbed lay for love of Barbara Allen. No, for love of Jennifer.
Jennifer! Jennifer!
Oh, good. Oh, the curtain moves. There she is. She spotted me.
WPC Marsh, please.
Okay.
WPC Marsh?
It's Jennifer. He's found out where I live again.
Letters?
He's outside now. I'm done with running and changing flats.
You want him prosecuted?
That's right. I want him prosecuted and jailed.
You know what you'll go through?
Yes. I remember your warning.
If he pleads guilty, he'll be fine. All over in an hour or two. If he pleads not guilty, which is more likely, it will take days. Counsel for the defence will take you to hell and back. Add to that the fact that the tabloids will crucify you on a daily basis. He's their hero, you're not. You sure you want to go through that?
Yes, I remember the warning. Let the defence and the tabloids have their field day. I want my life back. He's outside my new flat now. A carload of coppers should sort him out nicely. Would you do that for me, Jan?
They're on their way.
And all she said when there she stood, young man, I think you're dying. Before Jennifer, my life was nothing. I hadn't been well. Mental breakdown. Months off work recuperating. I then returned to my job as head librarian. But after my one moment in the spotlight the previous year, suddenly life was totally hollow. Until Jennifer. And after Jennifer.
Great childhood. Mum and Dad loved us and protected us to death.
Us?
Sister, twin, Gina. She's the eldest by about 15 minutes.
Identical?
No, chalk and cheese. She got the beauty and the brains, and I got what was left, including a poet's rhyming manual. Finally, I just couldn't wait to escape.
It's usually the way. How did you manage it?
Cambridge. I got in on the back of good A-levels and some well-received poems.
And Gina?
She settled for staying at home and going to the local Red Brick.
The good daughter.
Yeah. She met Frank at college. They're married now. Frank's white, so Mum and Dad are still in recovery mode. Mind you, Frank will never know. They hide it very well, and Gina's not going to let on. He thinks he's a much-loved son-in-law.
Did you miss Gina when he went up?
Yeah. But I kept myself busy, joined lots of societies.
Not much of a life for a teenager. Racial problems.
Oh, I wish I could say no, but I can't.
But you coped?
Had to. I wrote about it. At first it was the usual rant, but I knew I could do better, be funnier, cleverer. The poem I finished with was good, my best. Had no problems getting it published.
I read it.
Oh.
Angry, but I laughed.
By the time I came down, I had enough bookings to survive for a while without packing shelves.
So, where does Pringle come into the story?
He booked me for a session at his library through the local arts association. I thought, just another booking. Just another booking. How wrong can one be?
The first time I saw her, it was like a dream come true. The woman I'd been waiting for all my life. I've heard people speak of it, love at first sight, but I've never believed it. But she walked off the street and into the library late that afternoon, obviously thoroughly in control of her young life. And I knew my life had instantly changed forever. And I knew I was going to have a relationship with this bright, sparkling young woman who the media were already giving such attention to. A relationship that would make up for all the dreary years wasted on my wife. A poor Veronica. Why did we marry? Nobody else would have us, perhaps. Well, the fact that there was perhaps a 25 years age difference between Jennifer and I didn't bother me. And I was sure, finally, it wouldn't bother her.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Georgeson, Poetry Society guest speaker.
I recognised you from the publicity poster.
Oh.
As James Pringle, head librarian.
Oh.
Yes. Well, I'll take you through and show you the room we're using. You had no trouble finding us then?
No, bit of a walk, but fine.
Oh.
How did he look? Any indication he might be a nut?
He didn't register. Tall, old man wearing a tie. End of story. He was the paying employer, of course, so merited my brightest smile. Chances were, if the evening went well, he'd book me again.
A bit hand to mouth.
Yep, that's poetry for you. So I didn't notice Pringle. But as he showed me to the lecture room, I realised I knew his face from somewhere, but I couldn't think where.
Did it come to you?
Yes. As I looked out of the window, I remembered there'd been local riots, and James Pringle had made the front page.
Not the library! You must leave the library alone, you hear me? Burn the shops, burn the banks and burn the businesses, but don't burn the books! Leave the library alone! Your children need it, even if you don't! Do not burn the library, you hear me? Do not burn the library!
I knew she recognised who I was, and I was pleased. It had only made a couple of the tabloids nationally, but the local paper had made a lot of my bravery. A front-page photograph of me, surrounded by savages in a sea of fire, with my fists clenched, raging against that ugly mob. An act of utter folly. But if they torched the library, I was out of a job, and too old to get another. So I faced up to them. I demanded they walk on by, which to a man and a boy and a woman they did. And so I became a local hero, lauded and applauded. And then I had the breakdown. But that also made the papers. Stressed out hero goes under. On sick leave for the first time ever. But the council kept my job open. It's quite useful, really. Come the next round of cuts, they would have to think very carefully before letting me go.
And what form did this breakdown take?
I woke up one morning and I couldn't move. I was chained to the bed by multiple strands of fear. Barbed, razor sharp, and cutting into me. My voice is mute, unable to scream as I so wanted to. I could see so clearly in my mind's eye the butchery that would have happened to me that night if I'd misjudged the situation. Machetes chopping at me in my head, and every one of those cuts could be felt. Well, Veronica didn't know what to do, and I couldn't tell her. I was mute. Finally, she dialed 999, and the police arrived, saw the situation, called an ambulance, and I was admitted to hospital. And finally, the screaming came.
You please stop.
You believe you're well enough to face up to court now?
Don't.
Are you well enough to continue, Mr. Pringle?
Stop.
Or would you like a short break?
Don't cut me.
No, I'm fine, Your Honor. And yes, I am fully recovered from my breakdown now. And the sooner we put this nonsense that Miss Georgeson is accusing me of behind us, the better.
When did you first suspect something wasn't quite right?
When we shook hands that first meeting. He held mine too long. I couldn't get it away from him without appearing rude. The moment made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
And?
He led me to the room where I was to lecture, chatting as though nothing untoward had happened. And to him, perhaps it hadn't.
I knew she would go down a treat with the Poetry Society, and I was right. Average age 75, same people every time. I sat in on the session, just enjoying watching her, listening to her. She was a delightful performer. And then came the moment that told me my dreams of a possible life with her were not in vain. It was a tanka, a Japanese syllable count poem written in the 12th century. As Jennifer said the poem, she looked directly at me and gave me her message.
Why was it fated that in one brief night of love your heart was sated, whilst mine was made your captive for as long as I shall live?
The message she was giving me was plain. I knew I was right to dream, and my dreams were not going to be in vain. She would be mine.
Do you admit saying the poem to him?
No. I said the poem, yes, but I didn't say it to Mr. Pringle. I said it to the class, as an example of a beautifully balanced tanka.
Did you give no thought to the underlying message of the piece you were performing?
I know the message well enough, but I didn't know that Pringle thought I was addressing it to him.
You were a young lady in a short skirt, in a 25-strong crowd of geriatrics. And you mean to really tell the court that you were not making a play at Mr. Pringle, the local hero, even if only for the fun of it?
I wasn't, and I haven't ever made a play for Mr. Pringle.
You said he made you feel uncomfortable from the moment you met.
Yes, he kept hold of my hand too long.
But you did accept his offer of a lift home that night.
Yes.
Even though, you said yourself, you didn't have much of a journey.
Yes, I did.
Why?
I think I felt sorry for him. He seemed a very lonely person.
Miss Georgeson, if you just give me a few minutes to switch the lights off and lock up, I'll give you a lift home.
Oh, that's fine. There's no need. It's not too far to the bus stop.
Oh, it's getting dark out there, and this area is not the nicest of places.
I can look after myself. I'll be fine, Mr. Pringle.
Or do call me James.
I'll be fine, James.
Well, can I ask you to humour an older man? If I don't take you, I'd only spend the rest of my evening worrying if you got home safely or not.
You're sure it's not too far out of your way?
No, it's not too far. I knew her flat was close to my route home, and Veronica wouldn't miss me if I was late. The truth of the matter was, I hated going home. Home to that endless silence. No conversation between us ever. We'd said everything that was to be said many years before and didn't waste time saying it again. Even when I needed to use her, I didn't speak. Except if I knew the name of the woman or girl I was imagining while using her body, then I said it over and over and over again, not caring if she heard or not. Veronica was never ever there. I was alone with my dream that first night. Jennifer.
It was almost dark as we set off, but I kept catching sight of him as we rode through the night. He kept taking glances at me, surreptitiously, as if checking I was really there. And something about the looks he gave me and the fleeting moments I could see him made me alarmed. No, not alarmed, too strong a word. Uncomfortable. He was appraising me.
Meat on the butcher's slab fashion?
Exactly. Exactly that.
As we drove along, we didn't speak. I could just as well have been in the car with Veronica. Silence reigned supreme, but I didn't dare to speak. Would have come out as gibberish. My mind was racing. I wondered how far I should go that first night. Would she invite me in for a coffee? Probably not. Could I invite myself in? No. Should I tell her straight out how much I loved her? Her coat had fallen open, revealing her skirt. And her skirt had ridden up a little, showing her thigh just above her knee. And I so desperately wanted to put my hand on it, to stroke it. But it would have broken the spell. She wasn't one of the prostitutes I picked up over the years. She was special, huh? She was to be my wife. So I didn't touch. I just rode through the night, taking her home in silence.
He took you straight home?
Yes. When we got to the flats, I could see there were people in on other floors. Lights were on, and I was pleased.
People around if there was a problem?
Exactly.
And was there a problem?
Yes. We were parked under the streetlight. As he opened the door, his eyes were on my thighs, and there was a demon there. I suddenly knew he was dangerous.
Let me help you out.
No, I'm fine, thanks. No need.
Oh, please, I just...
I said no need.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was just putting my hand under your arm.
No need.
I was wondering...
I don't care what you were wondering. The way you touched me gave me a pretty good idea.
Well, I'm simply going to help you out of the car that...
Goodbye.
Jennifer.
Close that gate now. You are trespassing.
Jennifer, I just want to apologise if I've accidentally upset you.
Right, let's have some company out here. Come on down, everyone.
No.
There's an old groper to be gawked at.
Please, Jennifer.
If I were you, I'd be going. My flatmates are on the way down, and they're not very fond of dirty old men.
Now, that's not nice.
But neither are you. Go. Now.
Pringle bolted as the people came down.
How many?
Three or four, perhaps.
I'm afraid, Jennifer, you could be in trouble in court. Defence counsel's going to make a meal out of that action.
How many young people were living in the bedsits at that time?
Living there, I'm not sure. 16 to 20, perhaps.
And their average age?
At a guess, 18 to 24.
And were they all black, or only most of them?
I object.
Objection sustained. The colour is irrelevant. Continue. You
rang all the bells to get this mob of 16 to 20 young people, of whatever colour, out on the front porch to protect you against a feeble 58-year-old librarian, yes?
They were not a mob. Four or five people at most. My friends.
And you had these four or five people down to protect you. Even though you've already told us you knew of Mr. Pringle's nervous breakdown after the previous year's riots, when he had faced just such an angry mob.
I wasn't thinking of him. I was thinking of me. I was thinking of my own safety.
He had purposefully and inappropriately touched me.
You thought?
I knew.
And did you?
No, I never touched her purposefully. If I did touch her, it was accidentally, but I don't think I did. I was simply being courteous. It may be very old-fashioned, but I was simply being a gentleman.
Oh, Jennifer was right, of course. The moment I went to help her out of the car, madness took over. Not a grope, as she said. Hardly a stroke. The merest touch. But the memory still burns. I had to go straight back to the library to get her telephone number off the computer so I could call and apologise for accidentally touching her.
Hi, Jennifer Georgeson, poetess of the people, ready with a rhyme any time. How can I help? Hello? Is there anybody there? Hello? If you can hear me, I can't hear you. Is that you, Gina? Ring again, see if you can get a better connection. Bye. Keep trying. Hello? Hello? Who is this? I know there's someone there. I can hear you breathing. If it's a joke, it's not funny. If you don't speak, I'm putting the phone down. Who are you? What do you want? Right. Enough.
I was totally speechless. Hearing her voice on the telephone just bowled me over and left me incapable of saying a word. I was still at the library when I made the first call. In the first half hour, I must have phoned her half a dozen times or more and heard her speak each time without being able to make any reply myself. And then I kept getting the engaged tone. I went on trying for another hour, then gave up, realising she'd obviously left the phone off the hook. I locked up and went home.
That call was the last time I ever made a funny while answering the phone. Poetess of the people was a thing of the past.
Did you guess it was Pringle?
No, never crossed my mind. Just some nut. Practical joker.
Some joke.
That night the calls kept coming. I rang the operator to see what could be done about it.
They put you through to the malicious calls unit?
Yes. The options on offer were straightforward enough. A new telephone number within the day, or them tracing the caller and reporting the number to the police.
Regulations. So why not change your number? 24 hours, your problem's over.
It would have been an economic disaster. I needed the world to know my number so I could work.
So, what did you do?
I simply took the phone off the hook.
When I got home that night, Veronica was already in bed. I immediately started phoning Jennifer again. Still engaged. I kept saying to her in my mind, "Put your phone back on the hook, woman. Now." But it didn't work. I realised I was being watched and turned and saw that Veronica was standing in the doorway, just looking at me blankly. I didn't know how long she'd been standing there and didn't really care. But I realised it presented the perfect opportunity for filling in the time until the telephone was back in action. So I crossed to her, took her upstairs to the bedroom, and closing my eyes tightly, used Veronica to make love to Jennifer. For the first time.
So, how did you feel about the calls?
It scared me.
It's a big intrusion.
Yes.
When I was finished with Veronica, I got up and tried Jennifer's number again, still engaged. I decided the only answer was to write to her. A letter I didn't intend would ever see the light of day. A paean of praise to her beauty. First I called her my black beauty, but that looked a little stark on paper. So I snowed out black and let beauty stand alone. I mentioned that I had the arts officer's list of all her performance dates and venues, and I would attempt to attend, if not every one, at least as many as I could. And by the time I was finished, the letter was pages long and morning was in the sky. I never intended to post it. Ever. But finally, I couldn't stop myself.
So how often did you write to Miss Georgeson?
Now and again.
Every day?
Not every day, no. Most days when I knew where she was, yes.
And how often did you write per day? Once a day, twice a day, three times, four?
Only once or twice at the most.
We have a bundle of 10 letters, all postmarked the same day and all arriving the same day.
Well, sometimes when I didn't know where Jennifer was, I'd keep writing until I had a new address and then send them on to her as a bundle.
Did you not see how distressing this might be for her?
Why? If someone tells you with sincerity how much they admire your talent, how much they love you...
Over 1,000 letters in an 8-year period. 1,000 letters arriving in her hallway, no matter where she ran to escape you. 1,000 unwanted protestations of love.
She didn't have to read them.
Oh, but she did, Mr. Pringle. She did. Every letter had to be read in case you were threatening to arrive at one of her venues and disrupt her performance yet again.
I didn't disrupt her performance ever. I simply showed my appreciation of her talent. Just because the other members of the audience couldn't see how special she was didn't mean that I had to sit on my hands. She was a rising star.
Everybody in this courtroom knows that, Mr. Pringle. Now, she is having to curtail her career and the number of her appearances because of your unwanted attentions. This court must see that this harassment is stopped.
Just before dawn, a car pulled up. I looked out and saw it was Pringle. He posted something through the letterbox and drove off.
A letter?
Yes. I read it standing in the hallway. It was pages long and full of mad ravings of eternal love. He called me Little Wife over and over, then saying how he would pursue me forever until I was his. I knew then I really had to stop this madness before it got out of hand. I went back to my room, put the telephone back on the hook, and checked the time by my watch. It should take him perhaps an hour to get where he told me he lived, providing he drove straight there. I got dressed and sat and waited for the telephone to ring.
And did it?
Dead on time. Hello, Jennifer Georgeson. How can I help? Well, that makes me fairly sure that it is you, Pringle. The mail you delivered is not wanted. I have no interest in you whatsoever. Do not attend my concerts. You will not be welcome. The phone calls you made last night and this morning are intrusive and must stop at once, or I'll go to the police and have you arrested for harassment. Got that? Take heed. This is the only warning I'm going to give you. Yes!
Hi, it's me.
Oh, sorry, Gina. Been a bit of a night.
I woke up thinking you've got a problem.
Well, your intuition is right. Look, would you mind if I come to stay with you and Frank for a while?
Is it a major problem?
No major problem. I'm giving notice here. Moving out this morning.
Yeah, we'd love to have you.
Great. I'll be there by lunchtime.
I look forward to seeing you then.
Yes, me too. Look forward to seeing you both. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye, Mr. Pringle. The bird is flying the coop.
It took me some little while to realize she'd gone from the flat. I kept phoning, but nobody ever answered. Every day I wrote her letters,
delivering them by hand, but never catching sight of her, as I hoped I would. And one day a woman answered the phone, and she said Jennifer had gone. I asked for her new telephone number and address, and she said she hadn't left one, but I should write, as there was a stack of mail in the hallway for her, most of them in the same handwriting, and Jennifer would no doubt come and collect them, finally. I knew immediately that they were my letters, and that I had to get in and get them back before anyone else opened them.
How did Gina take it?
Made a joke of it. Said I'd obviously found the perfect match at last. Old grey and on his last legs.
Not a good joke.
No. Frank was a bit more sympathetic. He said he'd call in at the flat and collect my mail when he was in the area. That was a relief. Once that was done, I imagined Pringle was behind me forever.
I set off, intent on breaking into the block of flats. It's extraordinary that I can say it so nonchalantly now. A lifetime of being a law-abiding citizen out of the window without a thought. Well, I'd been at the flats nearly an hour, biding my time. I was just about to get out of the car and go and do the deed when another car pulled into the street, drove up, and parked right outside the block of flats. And a tall young man got out of the car and went up to the front door. He had an empty carrier bag in his hand. He opened the door and went in, but didn't close the door behind him, just went and stood in the hallway. I could see his shadow through the glass. He was in there, less than a minute, then came out again and shut and locked the door behind him. And the carrier bag was now half full. And I knew, without a doubt, that my letters were in that carrier bag and would soon be on the way to wherever Jennifer was now living.
So, how many letters were there?
A couple of dozen. Pringle must have spent hours writing them. I waited till Gina and Frank went to work before I settled down to read them.
How were they?
Mainly just sickeningly soppy stuff, the same drivel as the first. But every so often a letter would have a vague sense of underlying intimidation and anger.
His frustration showing through?
Yes, I think so. I kept those to one side, intending to hang on to them as evidence if need be. When I'd finished reading them, I bundled the ones I was throwing away back in the carrier bag. I went out of the front door and round to the side where the dustbins were, lifted one of the lids and threw them in. I turned round and Pringle was standing directly behind me.
Oh, no.
I couldn't stop myself with the shock of it. I screamed.
No, you have nothing to fear. It was an accident when I touched you. Please, don't scream. Let me comfort you. Please, Jennifer. No, there's no need for this. Stop shouting. Jennifer. Jennifer. Please, Jennifer, no.
Without warning, she kneed me in the groin, hard, and then ran past me through the front door, slammed it shut, just as the police arrived. I don't know whether they'd been called by neighbours or were just cruising, but they were there. And they didn't want to listen to my protestations. No, one of them took me to the police car and put me in the back. And the other, a woman, she went to talk to Jennifer inside the house. The woman, the WPC, took the letters. Well, so what? Since when is it a crime to write someone a letter? I was taken to the station. Guilty of nothing, save being pleased to see her and trying to calm her down. Well, they let me go. But with a caution, apparently by being on her sister's pathway, I was trespassing. I was always much more careful after that.
How long has this been going on now, Miss Georgeson?
8 years. 8 years last Wednesday evening, to be precise.
And how often have you had to change your address?
It has averaged 3 or 4 times a year. Once he didn't find me for 6 months, so that year I only moved twice.
Does he usually find your telephone number as well?
He did, but I don't have a telephone number anymore. I no longer dare have an incoming line wherever I settle down to live. He would find it.
So, how do you keep in touch with people?
I have an agent. She looks after work calls, and I ring her every day. And I call friends and family on a mobile. Nobody but me has the number. I only make outgoing calls.
So nobody can get in touch with you directly by phone?
No.
Email?
I had it briefly, but he was waiting and tracked me within 2 days. Email is much too easy to trace, so I don't use the facility at all.
So you can only be contacted by letter?
That's right.
And does Mr. Pringle still write?
Yes. That's how I know when he has found my new address. And in the letters, he'll make a remark about my appearance to let me know he's watching me as well.
What sort of remark?
He might mention he likes the colour of an outfit I've just bought, or the change of my hairstyle. He's obviously watching me all the time.
What effect has this had on you?
I live my life waiting for him to find the address of my new home and to spoil it with his constant barrage of unwanted mail and gifts.
How has Mr. Pringle's behaviour over the last 8 years affected your career?
I virtually don't have a career. I can't do public appearances anymore. Had to stop 5 years ago.
Why?
He ruined everyone with his mad over-enthusiasm.
How could he attend so many?
I was told his wife died. He took early retirement.
What would he do during your performance?
He usually turned up and caused a disruption. People now know my work through my books and through occasional television appearances.
What would you like from this court?
I would like to live a normal life. I would like to have Pringle out of my life. I would like to be left to get on with my career in peace.
I can't remember when I started hating her. It sort of crept up on me over the years. I think it was after I realised I was a prisoner. Her prisoner. And only she held the key to my escape. And the key was her body. And that key was never going to be given up, voluntarily. It had to be snatched away. And then I would be free. If we'd had a fling, it would all have been over years ago. That first night, in the car, perhaps.
Wonderful.
Oh, at last.
Keep going.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
Oh.
You know, oh. You're my hero.
Oh, I love you.
I worship you.
Oh, I love you too.
Oh, I love you.
Yes. But we didn't. She played the Vestal Virgin, and I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. And what have I got to show for it? For the wasted years chasing a dream. I do know now that I won't have any peace until she's dead. Just like Veronica's death gave me peace. It was a terrible accident. That's what everybody said. Why, I didn't say anything. Kept my own counsel, seeing as I knew how wrong they all were. And if you can do it once and get away with it. A terrible accident. And once the deed is done, give myself a fresh start. Yes, that's what I need. A fresh start.
One final area of questioning, Miss Georgeson.
Yes?
You will, of course, be making money out of this trial, yes?
In what way?
Come now, don't be naive. Surely you'll be writing articles for newspapers, magazines, writing it up as a book. In all sorts of ways, you'll be making money.
That's not the reason the case was brought. I don't want to make money out of it. I just want to put this behind me and get on with my life.
You may not want to make money, Miss Georgeson, but you will make money. And do you really think Mr. Pringle, having helped you make a lot of money, should go to jail for falling in love with you? And writing you fan letters to tell you so?
If that's what it takes to stop him harassing me, yes.
I have heard both sides of the argument in this case, and I can see that this has been an enormous disruption of Miss Jennifer Georgeson's life over many years. But Miss Georgeson must bear in mind that if one becomes a public figure, as she most certainly has, one must be prepared to pay the price in public attention that being a public figure brings in its wake. All too often, fans can be besotted with the stars they are favouring. But there is a level beyond which such attention is inappropriate. where it slips into being harassment under the meaning of the 1997 Protection from Harassment Act. Has this case reached that point? When it comes to the person of Mr. Pringle, I think we see before us a rather pathetic figure. Tragically losing his wife in a terrible accident, he is now a lonely man with no family or friends on whom to lean. Except, as he sees it, Miss Georgeson. Many of us can see why he should look to such a beautiful and charming lady with a degree of hopeful awe. This talented young woman, who has her whole life ahead of her, perhaps cannot see the effect someone of her standing can have on a sad creature like Mr. Pringle, who has very close to nothing. Truth to tell, he himself walked briefly in the spotlight and perpetrated an amazing act of selfless heroism that I must bear in mind when I pass sentence here today. I must say at this point that in this instance, I do not intend to give Mr. Pringle a custodial sentence.
I know what the magistrate said was a bit of a shock, Jennifer, but Pringle will most likely be given restrictions as to what he can and cannot do.
He's not going to be put in prison, is he?
No.
Just for a moment. After 8 years of hell, I want to live a normal life without having to look over my shoulder every step of the way. Is that too much to ask?
I'm afraid in this instance, yes. I am sorry.
Tonight will be my last night in my present flat.
You're moving?
I have to. I know he knows where it is.
How do you know?
I saw him from my window yesterday, lurking at the corner. So, on I move once more. It can't be right. It just can't be right.
What Jennifer and the court doesn't know is that I've been in all of her flats in the last 6 years or so. Never left a mark. Walked around, opened her drawers, touched her lingerie, read her mail. Kept my eye out for new boyfriends. Ah, she never kept them long. I was obviously the only man for her. So I went in all her flats and always left before she came home. This time I'm staying. This time I'm setting myself free of her forever in the only way possible. She should be here any time now. I can't wait. And all he said, when there she stood, young girl, I think you're dying. Ah, good. That'll be her now.
That was Love to Hate. The part of James Pringle was played by Andrew Sachs, and Jennifer Georgeson was played by Kathy Tyson. W.P.C. Marsh was played by Natasha Pine. Counsel for the Defence, Gavin Muir, and Counsel for the Prosecution, Becky Hindley. The Magistrate was played by Garrard Green. Love to Hate was written by Wally K. Daly. The director was Pam Fraser-Solomon.